Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
A little bit of embarrassment yesterday in the swimming pool when I went swimming, because I got to the changing rooms and pulled out my swimsuit, which I haven't worn for a couple of weeks because I've been away and faffing around and catching up, and it had perished. You know how they go, the elastic goes.
This is not like when you told us about the rolled up sock in your gusset.
No, it's, I know what you mean. It's the same swimsuit, but this swimsuit, the elastic's all gone or whatever is in it. And you know how it all puckers and goes a bit see-through? And
yes, Trish.
And usually on the sort of boob area and the bum area, which this one had. And I just thought, do I just not swim and go home? Do I be all Marian and prudish-like and go home?
Yeah.
Or do I just think, hell with it all and... I did. I went swimming. A bit see-through and baggy. What
as your mum would say, and my mum as well, no one's looking at you, Trish.
Yeah.
No one's looking at you in your baggy swimsuit with your baggy knees and your baggy bottom
baggy
and all the saggy,
else.
Baggy everything else.
Yes,
no one's looking.
True.
You just live your best life in the fast lane.
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome to Postcards from Midlife. I'm Trish Halpin.
And I'm Lorraine Candy, and we're on a mission to help you make the most of your magnificent midlife. We'll be tackling everything from mind and body wellness to HRT and your sex drive. Trish and I are here to help you have a stylish second act and answer all your midlife questions on fashion, beauty, careers, relationships, family, and as always, the challenges and joys of parenting teens.
Here we are again, settling nicely into series 7 of Postcards from Midlife. I think you could say our behinds are now firmly back in the saddle after the summer break.
Well, I don't know how firm yours is, Trish. Mine's not firm. I've eaten a load of Cornish cream teas over the summer. But I am positively giddy with excitement at some of the guests we've got lined up for our new series. We kicked off last week with the fabulous wellbeing expert and Menopause After Cancer podcast host, Dani Binnington. She of the lovely hair. She was absolutely brilliant. I loved meeting Dani. She was a great interview, and I highly recommend listening to that if you haven't heard it yet. And we have a deluge, don't we, Trish?
A deluge.
Marvellous midlife women from all walks of life queuing up to come on the show this season, including TV presenters, best-selling novelists, prize-winning novelists, fitness gurus, and a Lord Mayor, no less.
Intriguing. And thanks to all of you who put your suggestions on the Facebook group for who to interview, because we love to hear your ideas for guests and topics, as well as your brain fog bloopers, your teenagers' brain farts, your midlife dilemmas, all the highs and lows, in fact, of this wonderful time of life.
Yes, I popped a picture of us on our jolly holidays on the group, just in case anyone was missing us over those summer weeks. And I wanted to find out as well what everyone else had been up to. What an adventurous lot.
Yeah,
our followers are, amazing. Our community is. Well, thank you, Helen, for posting a picture of yourself hiking along the West Highland Way. And another Helen, camel trekking somewhere in the desert. She didn't say why. And Susan posted a very glamorous picture of herself and three equally stylish other midlifers saying, just back from a girls' only holiday in Morocco with my sister, my best friend and her sister. Best holiday ever without the kids or hubby.
That's the magic ingredient.
Imagine that. I can do with one of those, I think. Probably in the next year or so, Trish, just put it on your to-do list, because I went to Cornwall with, I think, hordes of teenagers celebrating the end of their A-levels. And I don't know if I'd call it a holiday, given all the dishwasher towel shenanigans that occurred.
Yes.
But it was lovely being around all those wonderful girls just about to start their new life.
And continuing the adventures from the Facebook group were Tammy, who was horse riding in Yosemite. That got you a bit jealous, didn't it?
I know, that's on my bucket list. I want to go and stay on a ranch in South America.
Ride a horse called Nancy, like Tammy did. Very nice. And then we had
about
Carly.
The cowboys, Trish. Really.
Never mind the horses. Yeah. Carly was cycling the Hebridean Way, and slightly less adventurous, but fairly intrepid nonetheless, I would say, was Nicole mounting, if that's the right word, a pedalo in the sea.
She's not the right word,
got up there, got down the slide. And Bid, who was crocheting on the beach in Comperta. Now, do you have any idea where Comperta is, Lorraine?
Is this another one of your I've got a bigger brain than yours geography quizzes for me, Comperta? Now, does that feel like it might be somewhere in Spain, possibly?
Oh, so close. So close. I have to confess, I had to look it up as well.
I don't even know what's close to Spain.
Portugal, you diddy-diddy-diddy-diddy. Well, I think you need to sharpen up, my friend, because we have expanded our reach. We now have some lovely group members from Israel as well. Some new members, including Brenda in Galilee, Estelle in Jerusalem, and Sharon in Beit Hashmoneh. I'm sure I pronounced that wrong, so I do apologise.
I think you have. Yeah. Well, it's spelt B-E-I-T, so, but do feel free to correct us on that, and apologies if we have pronounced it wrong. But everyone in the Midlife Gang is welcome. We'd like to hear about everything that you're doing, actually. It's time to crack on, though, and tell you what we have in store today. Our special guest is the 90s party girl turned fashion and interior designer, Pearl Lowe. She's going to be coming on to talk to us about how she recovered from a drug addiction and created a new life and family along the way.
Yes, and Lorraine and I are going to also be facing our own personal fears as we confront our empty nests with our kids heading off to university any day now. So in How to Win at Midlife, parenting expert Dr. Gauri Seth has been sharing with us how to manage all the transitions and challenges parents may be facing at this time of the year, whether it's university, starting secondary school, or heading into those big exam years. I think you've got all of those.
It's all happening.
You're
my
so
four
millions of children, exactly.
And I'm here for you, Trish, because who knows what's going to happen after that moment when those lovely twins of yours head off into the big wide world. We have got a lot of chatting to do about that today, so let's crack on with it. Today's guest is a fashion and interior designer whose life has been one of Gen X's most talked about adventures. A teenage wild child, Londoner Pearl Lowe started out as a singer with the band Powder, who toured with Suede and The Verve. She was at the heart of the Primrose Hill party set, whose all-night escapades came to define a cultural moment in the 90s. But behind the glamour, Pearl, now 52, was deeply unhappy. In her riveting best-selling memoir, All That Glitters, the mum of four chronicles how she transformed her life after becoming addicted to heroin, reinventing herself and moving to the country to focus on family and work. She's been sober for 17 years, during which time she has written four interior books, renovated two houses, launched a sellout line of dresses, and brought up Alfie, 25, Frankie, 23, and Betty, 16, alongside Daisy, the daughter she had when she was 19. Pearl has been with her partner, supergrass drummer Danny Goffey, for 27 years, and she's here today to talk about coping with change, staying creative in midlife, motherhood, and the importance of friendship. Welcome to Postcards from Midlife, Pearl.
Hi.
Right, okay, so I'm going to start with your lovely life in, is it Froome or Frome? How do you say it?
Froome. F-R-O-M-E.
In Froome.
Yeah, like Broome.
In the countryside. We're quite jealous of this lovely, beautiful, yes, glamorous life you're living in the countryside. Trish spends hours on Rightmove. Tell us this morning what room you're in and what you've done.
Ah, so I'm in the kitchen. This actually was a dining room when we first bought it. It had a sort of long table and a big chandelier over the table. And the lady of the house said, I really like the fact that you're the first people that have come in and said they're not going to put a whacking great island in the middle. And I was like, oh no. And that's exactly what we did. As soon as we sort of renovated the house, this the hugest island you've ever seen has been put in. So yeah, but we did a lot of work. I think we've been here nearly 6 years, which is crazy because normally we move every other year, but we've managed to stay in this one.
Well, there's obviously something about it that you really love. You moved out of London in 2005, I think, so yeah, about 17 years ago, really to remove yourself from an environment which you felt wasn't good for your mental or physical health. But creating that new life away in a totally different environment, that must have been quite difficult, I would have thought. And how did you do that? And what advice would you have for anyone, maybe like me, considering such a big transition or a big move?
Yeah, it is, because I actually was born and bred in London, and I went to school in London. One of my friends was from London. It was a massive, massive move. I definitely have been thinking about it for a very long time. And my husband's from Oxford. And when I first met him, sort of summer of 95, I remember kind of being quite jealous of his life because he was just sort of, you know, going around pubs. It was really, that summer was really hot, and there was all just greenery, and all his, everyone knew him. And I just thought, wow, what a life. You know, it's kind of so different to London. It was sort of concrete jungle and kind of, and I just thought, wow, I really like this. So for many years, we looked at various places, and it wasn't until we finally sold our house in Camden that we decided to make the move.
And how did you start making friends? And because you have to get in a car to go anywhere in the country, don't you?
Yeah, no, exactly. And also, when we first moved, I don't think I had a sat nav. Do you remember, like, in 2005, I was lucky because I had three children in different schools, you know, sort of all age groups. So I could meet kind of parents in those years and sort of kind of get the kids to play dates and things like that. And I was pregnant with Betty, my youngest. So in a way, I did have a variety of people to choose from to kind of, because I think I'm quite a sociable person. So for me, leaving London and leaving literally every single person that I knew, you know, was quite daunting, obviously. And yeah, you have to be really brave and meet new people. I was really ready by that point.
Yeah. So in your book, you talk a lot about that as well. And I'm a big fan of Daisy, as you know, your lovely daughter. She's 33 now. She's a model. Yeah. I guess I've known her since she was, you know, when I edited Elle, I used to sit next to her a lot at shows and dinners and things like that. And I always thought what a kind of elegant and polite and really well brought up girl she was, actually, and how sort of normal and sensible she was. And I was really struck when I read your book that you'd had to hide a lot of yourself from Daisy as a mum, just to protect her, sort of alongside the addiction. A lot of parts of your life she didn't know about. That must have been really stressful. How do you look back on that now as a mum in your 50s?
Yeah, I think it was because I just did not want her to know any of my kind of addictions. And I think us as a family, we are very normal and we're really tight knit, especially with my parents. And my parents were incredible because I was a teenager when I had her, and they sort of said, look, come on, we'll help, you know, we'll be there for you. And I was a single mum as well. So it was really hard. I had, like, all my friends were kind of going out and partying things, and I was just like, no, I'm really sorry, I've got to babysit tonight. Do you know what I mean? I think I went crazy later on because I'd had that time when all my friends were at uni and going crazy.
Yeah.
And I was at home with a child. I think I kind of let loose a little bit later, which wasn't great, obviously. And I didn't feel good about myself, which is why I kind of, you know, had to sort of stop everything and leave and sort of change my whole life, because I'd have to put my kids first, really. Mm-hmm.
Did you always want to be a mum?
Yeah, absolutely. Always. I mean, I was so into babies and kids from very, you know, I'm very maternal. And so it's just like, you know, I like that kind of tribe thing. It's a funny thing because I was talking to my youngest, Betty, and she was like, you've kind of put me off having kids, mum. Like, I don't know if I'm going to have any because it's always so hectic.
Oh, yeah, because you did go on to have three children then with Danny, including obviously Betty, and she's the youngest. So is she the only one left at home now? Is there an emptiness going on? What's happening? Because we're in the middle of all of that, Lorraine and I, with emptiness. And it's quite terrifying. The comings and goings.
Yeah, so I've still got Betty and Frankie at home. So I think the pandemic's been quite difficult because obviously I have a son called Alfie who moved to London. But before the pandemic, he's a DJ and he was touring with Fatboy Slim, and it was all kind of just about to take off him. And then all the gigs stopped. He's released an album like a couple of weeks ago, but I think it's quite hard for him. He's financially everything. So he's now talking about coming back as well. I remember saying this to my mom. I cried bitterly when Alfie went off to uni, and I was like, I can't believe it. And she said, they all come back. I mean, I went home when I first had Alfie and lived with my mum for 6 months. And so, you know, it's just kind of, I think they do come back.
And how do you navigate the balance in the house then? Because, well, I've got four and they're kind of either perpetually love each other or perpetually hate each other, and the bickering is kind of epic around there. What are your kind of family rules around all living together?
Well, it's quite hard. The girls, they get on so well, but they fight. And they fight. They're in an argument at the moment about a Miu Miu skirt of Daisy's, and she sold it back after Glastonbury. And it's like this whole thing, you're like in the middle, aren't you, over a skirt. And they're just like these horrible texts that are going on and everything. And the boys get on really, really well. But actually, Alfie is very, he's a Libra, and I don't know if anyone believes in all that kind of stuff, but he's a really good, he's sort of like in the middle and he sees both sides, and he's kind of like a really good balance in our family. I love it when he's at home because he's just sort of, you know, sees both sides of an argument and everything. So it's kind of quite good. But no, we argue like any other family. And Danny and I obviously have been together for 27 years, and we bicker. We're just like brother and sister sometimes, you know, we're just, you know, kind of bickering about this, that and the other. But I don't know. I kind of love it, really. I just like the madness of it all. Mm-hmm. And I could think, because I grew up in a family like that, so I think I've just created that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just recreated the similar dynamic. Yeah. What's it like having an older daughter then? So Daisy's 33. It's just, I mean, at the moment, so my eldest is 20 and Trish's twins are 18. We kind of look forward to that future bit when we can kind of be more friends. In a way, is it different, or do you still have to say, tidy your room, stop leaving the stuff everywhere, why don't you call me, are you going out late? Because that never stops, maybe.
No, Daisy's, I mean, the thing about Daisy, she's so tidy and she's so lovely and she's great to have around. And actually, out of all the kids, she's the least I see, because obviously she's so busy, she's in London, she's got a very full life. And we don't see each other as much as we'd like, but when we do, we're really close. And it is nice because she's a proper woman now, you know, so it's kind of, you know, I talk to her about my problems, and she's like my best friend, really. She's talking about maybe moving to the country. Like, I think she will move here when she has kids and things. But it is hard to her living in London.
She always seems really self-sufficient.
I mean, she's always been, you know, ever since she was 17. She left school early to model. I mean, we talked about it a lot. We sat down and we said, look, is this the right thing? And she said, but look, I'm getting all these jobs and I feel like it's right. And in hindsight, it would have been nice for her, because she was so intelligent, to have gone to uni and maybe, you know, because the modeling would have been there, yeah, wherever, you know. But she'd made that decision, so she's been gone since she was 17. Mm-hmm. And she lived in New York when she was 19, so that was quite hard, because I hardly saw her then. I used to go out and see her, but yeah, I'm quite used to it.
Are you a disciplinarian, mum? I mean, do you look back at your youth, because you were off out from sort of the age of 13 onwards, weren't you? Do you sort of think, did you instill a lot of boundaries, or are you quite relaxed knowing they'll work it out themselves?
Well, I did with Daisy, because obviously being a single mum, she was my first. I was very strict. She says that I was the strictest with her. And she always says to Betty, you're so lucky. You've got such a different one than I had. You can get away with anything and I can't, you know. I think I've parented them very differently. Mm-hmm. Betty is quite wild. And so I've been very kind of relaxed with my parenting with her, because I just think that she's so strong. She's going to do it anyway. She out of all the kids, she reminds me of myself. Mm-hmm. I look at her and I'm like, oh my God, I can see myself in her, which is not a great thing. Mm-hmm. But the great thing is that I can maybe maneuver or like guide her in a way. Yeah.
Have you spoken to your children about what you went through and what you had to do to recover? You know, we all worry that our kids are doing too much of everything. Is that a particular worry for you because of what you went through yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I'm lucky with two of them. So basically Daisy and Frank, they're really into their fitness. Daisy hardly drinks. I mean, she's amazing. She never has. She just hasn't got that gene, and neither is Frank. But Alfie and Betty are quite wild. And sometimes I sit down with Alfie. I mean, Alfie read my book when he was 12, he said. Mm-hmm. He said he took it off the bookshelf.
Wow.
He started reading it. Like, wow. You know, and I've been very honest with Betty. You know, I've just said, listen, I can't stop you. You're going to do whatever you want to do, but this is the pitfalls. And this is what I think that, you know, if you had a bit of a sober life, you'd be successful mm-hmm. much quicker. But, you know, it's not all about success. But what I mean is that I do basically mm-hmm. tell them. Mm-hmm. everything.
And do you feel guilty, Pearl? Because we all feel that guilt about everything, you know, working, being away, not being there, missing things, forgetting things, all of that stuff. What's your level of mum guilt in midlife?
I mean, I left London when the boys were 6 and 8 and Daisy was maybe 14, 15, something. I can't remember the exact ages, but Betty wasn't even born and she doesn't remember. But I remember, I've forgotten all these things, these amazing things that when they were babies that, you know, they asked me sometimes and I'm like, I can't remember. Like, you know, they're like, when did I first, you know, what age was I walking or when did I say this? And it's horrible, isn't it? Because, you know, a blur, like a literal. And so for me, I feel really quite sad about that. But I guess I've given them the most incredible life, childhood. Yeah. I remember Alfie sitting down and saying to me, Mum, I had the best childhood. He said to me, Mum, you don't have to worry. I had the best life. You know, so in a way that makes you feel okay about everything, I suppose, in some way.
Yeah. You've been on such a journey, Pearl, and you often talk about the healing and the support that you've had, I suppose, going through this and the counselling. What have you learnt about yourself as you've aged, and particularly into kind of midlife, that might be useful to our listeners?
Well, I think that you can only do the best with the tools that you have. And that's what I've learned as at that time, for whatever reason, I had to go through whatever I had to go through. And the thing is, I wouldn't be here now talking to you about, you know, and have the life that I have if it wasn't for that. I don't think I would have been able to live in the country had I not have gone through that crazy time in London, because I never, ever think, oh, I wish I was in London partying, you know, because I've done it, you know, I've done everything. And I'm so happy with, you know, being here and tranquil and, you know, sort of a very sort of simple, hectic life. But I think for my age now, like, that I've kind of got to this point where I try not to look in the past. I try to live in the moment and enjoy everything and just reach for the joy. And, you know, anything that brings me joy, I try and do. It's kind of, so for instance, like, creativity really makes me so happy. So I'm kind of every day I make sure that I'm creating something that I love. Otherwise I get a bit down.
Did you do therapy? Did you have counselling?
Yes.
Is that useful, do you think, for women as they age?
I think it's absolutely imperative. I just think that everyone should, especially if you're finding the aging process difficult, because of course we are. You know, I look at Betty, I shot Betty yesterday in my campaign, and she's so, you know, the skin, and that she just puts on everything and looks incredible. It's just like, I'll put on the same dress and go, oh my God, you know, I can't wear that. You know what I mean? There's a part of you, you just think, oh, it's such a shame I can't. But then it is surface stuff. So I see this amazing guy who got me sober, basically. And he's been unbelievable for our whole family. So anytime anyone's got a problem, I send them to him. And because he's just fantastic. And I see him whenever I feel wobbly.
It's a good idea, I think, isn't it?
Can we talk about the clothes that you make? You make beautiful dresses, you make swimsuits. And actually, we know we've got Betty in the campaign, but really they're for women of all shapes and sizes.
Yeah.
You're very clear that fashion isn't about having a certain figure. So tell us about the clothes. What are you working on at the moment?
In terms of the clothes, I find that I can't wear designer stuff because I've got hips, bum, boobs, you know, and a little bit rolls and things. And I go into a shop and I'll try on something and I just go, oh my God, these are for skinny people. You know, this is that they just never have worked. So I started creating clothes simply because I could not find anything to suit myself. So I would find like vintage dresses. I take a lot of inspiration from the 30s and the 40s and the 50s where women were a bit more, you know, voluptuous maybe. So, and then I just create styles from that. So recently I've done swimwear and I've done skirts because I know I like to wear skirts when I go swimming, and little hats because I don't like my hair getting all with all the chlorine and everything. So I've been doing all that kind of stuff. And the reason why I always use Betty and Daisy is because they both got boobs and they're both a bit, you know, voluptuous. So, and I've been looking online and actually there are agencies now. They're plus size,
so but they're plus
size, the size 10. It's so mad, you know. It's kind of, I always think that's so nuts that a size 10 is a plus size.
I know, it's quite mad, isn't it? I've always wondered how Daisy navigated that and how she kept her self-esteem so kind of robust. Because I was listening to the Kate Moss Desert Island Discs and I just didn't realise that she'd gone through such horrors as a teenager, kind of on her own. How did Daisy get that self-esteem? How did you help her with that?
Well, Daisy did have a lot of that as well.
Yeah.
And only recently she's been sort of telling me some stories about photographers that were just trying to make her take her clothes off or coming on to her. And, you know, Daisy was very sexual at that age as well. Daisy's always been very comfortable with her body, you know, stripped off and doesn't care, you know. So I think they possibly got the wrong message. Sometimes, I don't know, but I know that she, I think with certainly modeling, I mean, I don't know if you watched that program recently, that the one about the French agencies, but it really freaked me because I knew some of the models in there. It was so dark, but you just think, God, I'm letting my daughter go into that agent, you know, that field. And it's just, it's awful.
I guess she can talk to you. That's kind of the main thing, isn't it? So...
I mean, I don't think she actually told me at the time, but recently she's been saying, oh my God, yeah, this happened. And, you know, but she's very strong, Daisy, and she's very into her women with bodies and not having to diet. She doesn't believe in diets. She works out. I don't know how she copes because, you know, to be in the public eye like that and not be sticked in, you're going to be...
There's controversy either way, isn't it? I was just talking yesterday to someone about the picture of Nicole Kidman on the cover of Perfect magazine, where she's very ripped and she's obviously exercises a lot. And there's been a lot of criticism about her trying to hold back the years. It's quite difficult when you're in the public eye, isn't it? How has aging felt for you? How was your midlife journey physically?
It's so hard. I read some articles sometimes. I think, how are you saying that's bollocks? You know, I'm sorry, but like, you know, it's so hard. Like, you sort of look a certain way and then suddenly you turn into 40s and then 50s. I mean, my 50th birthday, I literally wanted to just go to bed and not wake up again. I just cannot believe I am 50. Like, 50 just sounded like so old. But having said that, it's annoying because inside I like myself so much more, but outside it's just, as long as there's no mirrors, I'm fine. But the mad thing is that it is hard, the aging thing, and especially in the public eye, because I don't want to do surgery and I don't want to have Botox, but then I've got sort of lines and stuff like that. And so then people go, oh, she looks a bit old. But then if I did have all that stuff, they'd say, oh, she looks a bit weird. So you can't win, really, can you?
Yeah.
You either look weird or you look old.
What about, you know, we talk on this show, one of the themes is around perimenopause and menopause. How aware or prepared, because we weren't prepared at all. We had no clue what was kind of coming at us like a, you know, like a train on the track. Yeah. How about for you?
Well, so all my friends are a lot older than me in Somerset. So I've I've been here for 15 years. I've got some lovely girlfriends and they're all, I was going through the menopause. I didn't know. I just sort of had all these horrible symptoms and things. And so I went to my doctor and she did loads of tests. She goes, oh, you're perimenopausal. And I was like, am I? And I was 42. And I was like, is that early? She goes, yeah, it is quite early, but it's fine. You know, it takes 5 years. And I was like, 5 years? And she's like, yeah. So anyway, so I talked to my girlfriends. I was like, do you know about this menopause thing? And they were like, yeah, we've been through it. And I'm like, what? Why hasn't anyone told me? You know, like, no one.
I know, why doesn't anyone tell you?
So what I decided was, when I'd gone through mine, I was like, right, I'm going to tell everyone what they need to do. So I'm a bit like a kind of, you know, being a bit annoying to all my younger friends. I'm like, you've got to go on HRT, you've got to do this, you know, all the things that have helped me. But I'm on everything. I mean, I don't care. I'm just like on gel, I'm on the pills, you know, I'm like downing everything every single day because I need to be happy. And one of the things that I found was that actually I was quite a depressed person from 15 onwards when I started getting my periods. I think I just had a hormone imbalance, because now that my hormones are balanced, I'm actually quite happy every day and I don't wake up with that sort of black cloud over my head, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess when you've been through addiction as well, you look at whether there are mental health issues that you need to deal with, whether depression, you know, clinically diagnosed depression might be part of who you are and how your hormones might affect. You must have been very aware of all of that, having had that counselling, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess there's a lot of reasons why things are okay now, which is obviously I am creating, because obviously, you know, I was in a band and it wasn't very creative being in a band. All I did was sit on a bus with a whole load of sweaty men and then get up on stage and sing for an hour and then go back in a bus again. So it wasn't exactly very nice. And as soon as I started I started with the lace curtains, dyeing all this lace and putting up and then and doing up our houses because we would sort of flip them. We'd buy, that's how we made our money. Yeah. We'd buy a house, flip it, and then and so that's when I started to think, oh, actually this is quite fun, you know, and actually enjoyed that life rather than just sitting on a bus. It's kind of cool, like with lots of different things, obviously going through the menopause and then being on medication for that has really helped. I can honestly say that I do wake up and think, oh, I feel quite joyous.
Yeah,
that's wonderful. Just don't look in the mirror. As long as it's in the mirror, it's fine.
I love that, feeling joyous and then looking for the joy, as you say, reaching for the joy. It's really nice. And I mean, you are a healthy person. You're a vegetarian. You obviously don't drink. You live a pretty healthy life. I mean, are you an exercise person? How do you look after yourself? What else do you do?
I swim every day and mm-hmm. I walk the dogs every day. So I swim, I've got a local members club down the road and mm-hmm. it takes me about 10 minutes to get there. And I go every single morning, whether it's 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning, and I swim every day. And then I have a steam, then I have a coffee, and then I come home and I start work. Mm-hmm. So it's great. So I have my little routine. I take the dogs for a walk. It's very important for my mental health to do those things. And also because I know lots of people are talking about ADHD but I think I'm ADHD, and I think that I'm going to maybe explore, not that it's probably completely useless now, but I have like repetitive thoughts and I'm a bit OCD. So I need the routine.
Can we talk about being with someone for 27 years? And how long have you been? You've been married since, when did you get married? How long have you been married?
2008. We tried to get married in 1998, but I was already married, but I didn't know. Well, I did know, but I had never got a divorce. It's so awful because we were getting married. We booked this sort of place in St. Lucia with our families. Everyone had bought their flights and everything. And then we were like, oh no, like I got to get a divorce first. And then it didn't. So they all went and we didn't go. So they went on a holiday. Anyway, I still got the dress. I bought this kind of like Dolce & Gabbana like crochet thing that Betty wears now, which is hilarious. Then we tried to get married again. And then I got freaked out about the weather because it was in the summer and we're going to do it all outside. And then it ended up being the hottest day of the year and I was really pissed off myself. And then I got pregnant with Betty and then it was like, okay, we'll do it. So finally did it in 2008 at Babington House. Mm-hmm. It was like a winter wonderland wedding so that I didn't have to worry about the weather, and it was snowing and it was great and it was all fun and everything. And we've been together 27 years. He's younger than me. When I met him, I just thought he was some, you know, young kid that we'd be mates for the night. And then I don't know, he just pursued me. And then I came back to London and he lost my number, because in those days there were no mobile phones. And he'd lost my phone number and he had to pretend he was his tour manager and get in touch with the wrong press officer. He'd sort of rang the wrong press officer and they said, we don't look after her, but we can get hold of her. And then I was like, what? And anyway, we've been together 27 years.
He's lived through everything you've lived through, hasn't he? And and Supergrass are back on tour, aren't they, again? Yeah, so it's a whole change of life.
Yeah, it's weird because they've reformed, they're going to write new material, they're back, you know, it's been amazing, like everyone's so excited and everything. But what's so weird is hearing those songs, but being 27 years later, older, it's sort of like, instead of wanting to stay out all night and partying, it's like, can we just go back home now? Can we go to the hotel? It's such a weird thing because it's the same songs. And you know how music takes you back?
Yeah.
But then you're so much older. It's weird.
You said in one interview that what you thought made it work was that he's a little bit forgetful, Danny, and you have to sort of look after him as well. So you had to be sensible to look after him. So it's kind of a good balance.
Yeah, we're a really good balance. He's actually grown up quite a lot since then, maybe since that interview. No, I don't know. I don't know when it was. But we're like best mates, and he makes me laugh. I think that's the funniest, that's the thing that keeps, that glues us together, is the fact that we make each other laugh. Like, we just laugh a lot. Oh God, he irritates me and I irritate him. You know, sometimes we don't talk for days, you know, we are like sort of best friends that sort of argue all the time. He's such fun. And also he's the most incredible dad. Kids adore him and really good.
Of course, the thing about midlife is that we are in that sandwich, rearing children and having aging, potentially sick parents. And you've talked very movingly, Pearl, about losing your dad, Eddie, in 2016. I mean, you're so close to your parents. That's a really hard thing to go through as well. And how did you cope with that? And how's your mum coping?
Well, yeah, it was horrific. There's not a day that goes by that I don't think about him. I mean, he was so funny and this incredible guy that would, I guess he was such a massive character. So to lose him was devastating. And for my mum, because he was her soulmate and they'd been together 56 years because she's 82 now and she lives in London. And I've got two older brothers. So they, you know, they live literally around the corner to her and I'm in Somerset. And it's hard because I go up every single week to see her, but it's not enough. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of like I feel so guilty all the time because I don't live there. And she'll come and stay and for a few days here and there, but she doesn't really like to. Quite far away and hard. It's just horrible. And I still can't really look at pictures of him because I just look.
What advice have you got for people going through that now? Because I think it's something a lot of our listeners will be dealing with.
I try and do when I meet my mum is make her laugh and bring again the joy thing. Bring joy.
I love it.
You know, and just tell her funny stories and you know, take her out for lunch and spoil her and buy her presents. Just do things like that. It must be so horrible for her. But she's still in the house that they lived in and still talks about him like he's there. You know, it's just like, your dad loves that. Or, you know what I mean? It's it's so hard. But I think time is an amazing healer for a start. Like, it was so painful for the first couple of years when he passed, because not only was he a dad to me, but he was a dad to Daisy as well. And when we lived in Camden, he would loved taking her to school every morning, and he'd pick her up every single morning and take her to school. And she was so close to him. Her and I, our grief is together. You know, we often talk about him, and if we're having a wobbly day, we'll speak about it. But time is an amazing healer. It's definitely not as painful as it was, but he's there all the time.
And you've been renovating a house again, haven't you? I think it's a 1940s beach house in East Sussex. You've written a book, Faded Glamour by the Sea, as well, which is helpful. What are your top five Pearl Low interior tips? Because I'm useless at it. Trish is into interiors. I've got no patience with mess. I can't bear mess or change, which doesn't bode well generally. What if someone was looking to refurb or renovate something, where do you start and how do you deal with all of that?
Oh, I know, because Danny's now thinking that he wants to get somewhere else. I'm just thinking, we've only just done this one. With this one, I just sort of thought, right, I'm going to keep it the aesthetic the same and just paint, because obviously it's by the beach. I thought, well, I'll just do it all off white. And then I started reading about Robert Keim, who sadly's just passed away, but he always said start with a rug, and I thought that's brilliant. So I started getting these kind of like on Etsy. They do these amazing sort of Turkish, but they're quite colourful. These rugs, and they look, I don't even think they are antique, but they really look antique. So I started buying those, and then I thought, okay, well I'll match curtains with them, and so you just start building rooms from just a rug, which is
from the rug.
Doing it. Yeah, a good way of doing it. And then I love sourcing locally, because I've always feel like it's so important to buy local, especially with vintage and antiques, especially now everyone's struggling since Brexit. Yeah, so I bought everything in Hastings and Rye and all the local places. And I think I've just added quite a lot of plants, plants which are kind of dying because I've got brown fingers, not green fingers.
Yeah, me too. So the book is out now, and I'm sure that's got lots of really helpful tips for anybody who wants more. You've got such a beautiful eclectic style. And have you got any other projects on the horizon? What does autumn bring?
Autumn's bringing quite a few things. I've got capsule knitwear collection coming up, which I'm really excited about, which we shot yesterday. And then I've got a wallpaper range. So I'm just doing three styles. I'm keeping it really simple, like I've never done wallpaper for my own website before, so I don't know how it's going to go, and I might add fabrics later on and stuff, but that's exciting. That's at the end of the month. And I've also got a velvet collection, so I'm doing, so my velvet dresses, I just do this one style that I bring out every year, and I add a color and it does really, really well. And they're all sort of like floor length. I've decided to expand the velvet range and bring in some new styles and velvet dressing gowns and things like that. So that's it. I mean, that's what's sort of keeping me busy at the moment, and obviously still promoting the book.
That'll all be on your website then?
polo.co.uk.
Brilliant.
And I've got lots of antiques and vintage. So I started doing that, which is bringing me the most joy, is finding things, because I'm a hoarder, in cupboard things, and putting them up on the website, and people are buying it, and it's so nice, you know.
Oh, so, spreading the joy, spreading the vintage joy. Love it. Oh, well, thank you so much, Pearl, for coming on Postcards from Midlife. It's been so wonderful to talk to you.
It's lovely talking to you. Thanks for having me
on. Thanks, Pearl.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So Lorraine, it's finally happening, the moment I've been dreading for about 18 years and 6 months, exactly. My twins are off to university in a few days' time. It's going to be empty nest. And I know daughter number two is leaving the candy household imminently for a life of academia and overdoing the tequila and tattoos, or whatever it is students get up to these days.
Yes, indeed, she is. Number two is off. It's a very traumatic time for everyone, for all the parents and caregivers with children of all ages. It's such a time of transition, isn't it, September, whether they're going to university, they're heading into the big exam year, or college, or starting secondary school. I've got one of each. My littlest one, number four, is off to senior school. It's very hard to get through, isn't it?
It is, especially when you've got four children like you, so it's happening all the time. And I know you are the parenting expert in this partnership, but given all the changes we're facing and everything you've had to do to get them all ready for it all, I thought I would take the opportunity this week to speak to an expert to see what we can do to ease the transitions. Because for me, one of the biggest fears is about losing that connection you have that you get from everyday living. Because when they're older teens, you don't always get to chat to them that much. And it's those little kind of moments in the kitchen that you kind of really bond. And what's going to happen? I mean, am I going to hear from them? When I do hear from them, is it just going to be a grunt down the phone? How did you navigate this challenge in the relationship when Sky went?
Well, I think you have to be mindful of the kind of communicators they are normally, because that doesn't really change. So number one is very communicative in our household, number two less so. So I will be putting in more effort to stay in touch and connect with number two. But what I would say, Trish, is they do come back a lot.
Oh, right.
And they do need a lot. And thank God for FaceTime and WhatsApp and all the ways in which we can connect with them. But I am keen to hear about transitions from an expert, because all of mine are at different stages and I'm having to balance that. So have you got some new advice for me, some new ideas?
Yes. Well, I met this really interesting woman. It was at one of those women's networking events and I got chatting to her, and she's called Dr. Gauri Seth, and she's a medical doctor and emotional intelligence coach who works with parents who want to enhance connection with their children at kind of any age. And it also helps to boost their resilience, their emotional intelligence and well-being, improve family life and dynamics. I mean, we all want a bit of that, don't we? And she's kind of used scientific insights from her experience in psychiatry and psychotherapy to create this thing called brain-based connection coaching. And she offers these programs which can help, as I said, with whatever stage you are in the parenting journey.
Yes, connecting is the key. So what does she say about uni students then? How do we stay connected to them?
Let's start with those. So actually, it kind of, you have to start with connection overall in turn. This relates to any age that your children are. And she says that the most important thing within any family system is creating connection. And you need to think of it like a Wi-Fi connection. You can't see it, but you know it's there because it's working. And when it's not working, you really feel it, right? because it's disruptive. So like we have sometimes on our little Zoom recordings.
Our Wi-Fi connection is a disaster.
Exactly. It can, you know, you can't see the person very well. You can't hear them. It's really kind of disruptive. And that's what it's like with an emotional connection too. So it can come and go and it can go up and down. And you just need to be able to know how to kind of manage it and reconnect. And she says about off to uni. So I said, what do I say to them? And she says, you just need to be honest and open with them about how you're feeling now as a parent. And it's, you don't want to be ladling loads of guilt and worry on them, but you just want to say something like, I want to always feel connected to you, even though we aren't in the same city anymore, because your best interest, your well-being, and you will always be at the front of my heart. And obviously words to that effect, you make it your own. And to say like, I'm really proud of you and I'm really excited for you and I want you to have a great time and I'm always here for you. Because if they can go off having heard something like that, if they have a good connection with home, they are likely, it's proven, to have a better time at college, because they know that mom or mum and dad or their carer have got their back, they're happy for them, and that will help them to settle in and be less anxious in the first place.
Yeah, I think the key is you have to tell them what you feel and what you would like to happen as well, and discuss that and listen to how they would like to do it. Because the actual physical parting, how they want to do it and how you want to do it, I found is often very different. And I feel like you need to listen to them, but you need to say how that may make you feel if you don't get the chance to do that moment. So that's about them feeling confident, isn't it? And knowing that they're going away loved. But what about the rest of us left at home weeping on the floor? Wandering around rooms, wishing there were wet towels everywhere, looking for coffee cups with terrible things growing in them.
Exactly. It's like all the horrors. But yeah, Nagori says that emptiness can be very painful and it can be triggering all transition points, create emotional turbulence. And it can often reveal something that you might not even be aware of. So she says this is a really good time to just be really kind to yourself and try and observe your feelings and emotions. So just acknowledge how you're feeling. I'm feeling angry, I'm anxious, I'm low, and say that's okay. And, you know, as all the good sort of therapists say, you have to kind of turn towards these difficult emotions, don't you? And kind of face them and sit with them. Think about where you're feeling it physically. What am I worrying about specifically? And you can sort of note it down in a non-judgmental way, because that will sort of help you kind of understand it. It might be that you found leaving home or going to university really, really unsettling and hard. And you're worried that your kids might experience that.
Yeah.
So you need to try and be curious and compassionate and non-judgmental, and maybe talk to a friend about it. We're going to be doing a lot of talking about this.
Yes,
and need your advice, or a professional therapist, obviously, if you feel that you're really, really struggling with it and you have that open to you.
Yeah, I think it's about supporting yourself, isn't it, as much as supporting them and checking where your resilience is, but also remembering their experience is totally different from yours, and you can't overlay your emotions on that. That all makes sense. It's such a work in progress. So really, we're talking about the early days and staying in touch while they're away. We didn't set up times to call when our eldest left home. We didn't have a kind of rigid thing. I just was really mindful during the day to think, I wonder what she would be doing. And moments when I knew she might have an exam, or when she might be being in, you know, moving into a different flat, all those kind of things, those moments I kind of noted down, and I would send her a text saying, do you want to talk about it? Because often they don't really want to have a great long conversation with you about it. And for her to tell me what time of the day was a good time. So I was always calling around 6:30 and she was like, oh, I'm doing my thing now. I did stop calling this time of the day. So I think just to be aware of that, but they are a bit hopeless at phone calls. So my eldest is quite good at connecting. As I say, number two, who's leaving, it's less of a skill for her. So how do we stay in touch with those who aren't good at calling us?
Well, this is the problem. So Gori says that when children don't tell you what's going on or want to reveal their emotional landscape, that's quite normal. A lot of kids don't want that. And you might have one that wants to tell you everything and one that doesn't want to tell you anything. So you can't judge the situation. Don't judge them. Don't judge you. It's perfectly normal. So she says maybe with those kind of children, if you've got the time, hopefully before they go, try and spend as much quality time together as you can. Like, you know, get them to, you know, suggest things to do together, love bomb them, just really spend that time kind of, you know, strengthening the connection right before they go. And then, you know, they should start opening up. She's always advocates as well that you try and give third person examples. So you use, because kids are very good at they don't want to be told what to do or what to say. But if you give an example of what another person did in a scenario, that can be helpful, because you might want to say, oh, I didn't really like talking to my mum at this age. And, you know, I didn't know what to do either when I was leaving home. So we can work that out. We can see how it goes. So it's that thing of your understanding and you're listening to them. So if you bring another person's, you know, perspective into the mix. And, you know, interesting, some parents and children can be more connected miles apart than they can in the same room together, can actually help strengthen that bond. But it is that thing of, I suppose, just trying to establish, how often are you going to connect? Is it going to be a WhatsApp? Is it going to be a family Zoom? Is it going to be whatever? And you can try and sort of put that in place before they go, but then you're going to have to go with the flow, aren't you? Because they are facing something totally new, I would say.
And they're separating, and they have to separate and be independent. We would often send pictures of the dogs, so we use the dog as a form of communication, you know, because they do miss the things that happen at home. They're removed from so much of what was part of their life. Now, what will I do, though, about my little Mabel, baby Mabel, as we call her, even though she's nearly 12? Yeah. She's off to senior school. It's a totally new school. She doesn't know anyone there. It still feels like a huge step to me. What's the advice around that?
Yeah, I mean, you have done it three times, but it's still, she's your baby, isn't she? And this, of course, is about letting go as parents, because they start wanting their independence, you know, going to big school. That's what it's all about. They want to do things for themselves. And your job here is to give them the confidence that they can do things for themselves. They can pack their lunch or their PE kit. They have the self-esteem to figure things out for themselves. That is going to give us confidence and solace, I think. And we have to just be less proactive and let them develop their own muscles for thinking and problem solving and decision making, which I think, you know, we can sort of just tend to kind of helicopter in, but you want them to feel that mum and dad are there if they need you, but just not on top of everything. So if things go wrong, if they forget their PE kit, if they forget their lunch, try to remember what it was like when you did that, because we all did that, right? Or we felt lonely because we found it difficult to make friends. We all learned strategies ourselves to cope. It wasn't our parents who solved it for us.
No.
So it's thanks to those difficult moments that kids learn to adapt and cope. Yeah, and of course, all that emotional connection stuff, the Wi-Fi stuff we've talked about at the beginning of this chat, that all really, really applies here. And let them kind of come home, and if they're upset because they've been split up from friends or whatever, just be there for them, sit beside them while they talk about that, but don't try and solve it for them.
Don't fix it, feel with, not deal with, as Philippa Perry told us. It all makes great sense, doesn't it? I think we should also chat a little bit about boundaries, because lots of new things are happening. And so we need to set boundaries, because boundaries make children and teenagers feel really safe. You may feel like you're disciplining them. Actually, it's giving them something to lean against, which is really useful. How do you do that and keep connection going as well?
This is a really important one for kids going into exam years, isn't it? Because things do have to change. And again, it comes back to that. If you have the connection, the emotional connection, they will respect your values and rules, because they will feel respected too, because you have that open dialogue and communication. Anyone who sets boundaries in a dominant authority authoritarian style, if that somebody did that to you, you know, you're not going to relate to that.
Me and Margot, isn't it, Trish? I'm not dealing with what she's telling me to do. She's staring at me now. Look, over there, she's saying, don't, setting me a boundary as you speak.
Yes, you've joined me in the house once again for recording. But
Margo's,
I think it's because you can't get enough of her, actually. You asked me to come and record here. It's not because there's building and banging going on.
We should
on
be
in your
having
house.
A boundary conversation with Margo. Go on then.
Exactly. But again, it's just about explaining the thinking behind the rules. So if you need to change things because they need to be studying more, doing revision more, again, you kind of explain the rationale. Yeah, it sucks at the moment, but you have to give it your best chance. We love you so much. We want you to do well. You know, of course, we have the power of hindsight and maturity, but we want them to have autonomy to make choices themselves. So we can't squash their autonomy and boundaries with boundaries and rules, but we just want them to know that they're there for them. And as you say, to make them feel safe and to do well.
I do keep saying this to all the parents on the Facebook groups. They come back from university. They come back so much. They are around as much as they can be. You don't lose them forever. They come back for the holidays, for the summer. And, you know, you see them probably a little bit less than you saw them when they were teenagers going out on Friday night, and you didn't see them till Sunday afternoon. So don't worry too much. I will be filling your time. Trish, while your twins are away. I will become your in-house teenager for you.
Exactly, my third teenager.
You will be collecting me drunk from a variety of venues on a Friday night, if that's okay.
Excellent. Anyone who wants to find out more about brain-based connection coaching or would like to find out about Dr. Gauri Seth, you can visit her website, brainbasedconnection.co.uk.
Bum, bum, ba. Anyway, I've just hoofed Margot out of the room.
Yes.
Just FYI.
Yes.
Did you hear
her purring on the mic? We should probably explain that we have to be in separate rooms. When you come and record in my house, we have to be in separate rooms because of the feedback or something technical that we don't understand. So you were locked in a room with Margot.
Yes. Also because you don't like me sitting too close to you and getting touchy-feely. Anyway, we're at Nostalgia Noodle.
We're distracted. Yeah.
And looking back in time, as is our way, had a bit of a sad thing over the summer recently. My Uncle Mike passed away.
Uncle Mike.
Been married almost 50 years. Three wonderful daughters, but my Auntie Brenda had given me the programme for the funeral. Do you call it a programme? Order of service,
I think.
And it was very lovely. And there was a little line at the end saying, tribute to be read from your favourite daughter, because they all do that, don't they?
They all call themselves the favourite daughter.
Favourite daughter, yep. Catherine, who enjoyed nothing more than a pint of tribute with you. And I thought, what a lovely thing to remember. And I was just sort of casting my mind back to the sort of times when you do first start having a drink with your teenager.
With your parents when you were a teenager. Yes.
And then I was just thinking, what wasn't that lovely? Couldn't think of with my parents because they didn't really engage in that, I guess. Didn't go out much and didn't really have alcohol in the house. And I do remember the one time wine would come out, it would be Blue Nun at Christmas.
Yes, always.
A bit of Blue Nun at Christmas. And then I remember taking wine back when I grew up, saying, it's a lovely bottle of wine for you, Mum and Dad. And I bought a nice bottle of red wine and my mum put it straight in the fridge. And I said, why have you done that? And she said, because you told us we have to put wine in the fridge.
Oh, yes.
Anyway, it was nostalgia noodling me back to the Blue Nun moment.
Tell
me about Blue Nun, Trish.
Well, I do have a Blue Nun story, unfortunately, which was, I think it was my first encounter with wine. And we were having a Sunday lunch. We didn't have a lot of alcohol at home either. We were having a sort of Sunday lunch thing. We had loads of Irish relatives who'd come over and were staying and were visiting for lunch. And Mum cracked open the Blue Nun and I got quite stuck in. I was quite partial to the Blue Nun.
How old were you?
I was probably, I'm going to say I was about 17. And the reason I say that is because I was going through a slightly pretentious phase and and I started going on about James Joyce, which is not what you do at the lunch table with your Irish relatives, because I was so drunk, Mum had to put me to bed. And then obviously, even, what are we talking, 45 years on, guess what happens every time I see those relatives? James Joyce. Have you read any James Joyce lately? That kind of thing. They don't forget. I was quite mortified when I woke up with my Blue Nun hangover, I have to say.
It was nothing like a Blue Nun hangover in an Irish family.
Exactly. When do they still make it? I don't know. But we've got a real nun in our family, so that trumps having a
Body. Who, remind me again,
Auntie
who is it?
Maura.
Auntie Maura, yes. Auntie Maura.
Yeah, she's fabulous. Well, that brings us to the end of Postcards from Midlife and our special guest, Pearl Lowe. New episodes are available to listen to every Sunday on your podcast provider, and we would really appreciate it if you can make sure to download your episodes so they count on our listener numbers. And if you could rate and review us too, that would be most marvellous.
And do tell all your friends about us. We want as many women as possible to join in the midlife conversation, which is what our private Facebook group is all about. And if you go on our private Facebook group, you will get news. You will be the first to know about our live show.
Woo-hoo!
In May next year, on May the 19th and 20th in London at the Design Centre. We're very excited about that. We're going to be announcing the lineup over the period of this series. So join the private Facebook group, answer a few questions, and then Trish lets you in. get mm-hmm. past the rope, the VIP Trish Halpin rope, and you can join in the chat. We will be able to welcome you to the show.
Yes, exactly. And of course, you can use the Facebook group to post any feedback on the topics we discuss and also suggest things you'd like to hear talked about. And you can email us at hello@postcardsfrommidlife.com or pop a little message on Instagram. Goodbye.
Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.